Welcome back, sports fans. Buckle up because this episode gets a little weird. We talk NFL draft, updates on Pac-12 gymnastics, golf, and softball. We also break down the NBA playoffs, and Kyle somehow compares James Harden to Jafar from Aladdin. We also try to figure out the name for the new royal baby, but first, in honor of the recent passing of one of the greatest EDM DJs of all time, here's Avicii with Wake Me Up. Kyle, there's a lot of interesting things going on right now in sports. It's insane. The NBA playoffs, NFL draft coming up. A lot of Pac-12 news we got to get into today. So it is going to be a jam-packed show. I'm really excited.
Absolutely. I think the draft and the NBA playoffs have both been unpredictable, which makes them exciting.
Yes.
So that's why I'm enjoying the playoffs like crazy, and I can't wait for the draft. And normally I'm not crazily looking forward to the draft because it's usually predictable, at least in the top five, and this year, not the case.
Yeah, absolutely. And let's start there, right? So I don't know, big news. The Browns came out and said they are no longer interested in Sam Darnold as the number one overall pick. So what are they going to do? What do you think is going to happen?
That happened?
Yeah.
When?
Recently, today, I believe. They said they've narrowed it down to who they want to take. There's two people they're going to take it with the first overall pick, and that it's they're not interested in Sam Darnold. Now, this just could be their ploy to get people off their back and get them off the trail, and then they take them number one overall. But what? So if hypothetically, if they really are off of the Sam Darnold train, what do you think they do?
Oh man, I heard a rumor that they were interested in Baker Mayfield.
I heard that too.
If Baker Mayfield goes number one in the NFL draft to the Cleveland Browns, there is so much pressure on that kid to perform, because not only are people are saying he's going to slip, he's short. People want to compare him to Drew Brees and Russell Wilson all you want, but he's not the prototypical NFL quarterback.
Right.
So if he went number one and then he failed,
yeah,
can the Browns afford to even take that chance?
I don't know. Well, and think about that trajectory for him, right? The storyline of him coming out was he was too short, only threw screen passes. You know, the offense really lent itself for him to pass for so many yards, X, Y, and Z. Great competitor, over-emotional, ran from the cops, a lot of legal trouble, blah, blah, blah. And to go through all of that and then still be taken number one overall, that would be insane, right? Like, that's got to be a 30 for 30.
So one of the things I would think about, if you were that Browns management team, you're making those decisions, the owner, whoever calls the shots, you usually say to people, just trust your gut, right? Whatever your gut tells you, go with. I think in the Browns case, you should listen to your gut and then do the opposite. Because your gut has been awful for 20 years. So maybe their gut is saying, take Sam Darnold, and they're saying, listen, we've been listening to this guy, this right. gut guy, for so long. We just need to go another direction, and they're just going to, you know, throw ish to the wind and
right.
see what happens with Baker Mayfield. I think if they don't take Sam Darnold, they take Josh Rosen. And they surprise everybody. I know people are saying Josh Rosen is going to drop personality, this and that. He says he's got other stuff outside of football, so football's not his only thing, but kid's got a ton of talent. And you need a quarterback for them. You have to.
Well, so my thing is, though, right, they have the first and the fourth pick. So for them, why don't they take Saquon Barkley number one and then take whatever third quarterback is that they want at number four? Because I don't think the Giants are going to take a QB. Only the Jets will at number three. And if they take Baker Mayfield, so be it. They could still get Sam Darnold or Josh Rosen or Josh Allen, whoever they have deemed the second best quarterback at that point, whoever the Jets don't take at number three. Then you have the most explosive athlete to come out of the combine in years in Saquon Barkley. So it's not necessarily like a, what are you doing? Because he's just outside of his brain when it comes to some of the athletic things he can do. But then you still get a top-tier quarterback.
That's a really good point. I mean, if you could sit there and take Saquon Barkley, who most of the projections have going number two to the Giants right now,
right.
You steal that pick from them. And then because those two teams don't need a quarterback below you, or the Jets do, but they're looking at somebody else. If you end up with Saquon Barkley and Sam Darnold,
right,
in the first two picks of the draft, I mean, oh my gosh, that would be what a successful draft that would be. That would just be ridiculous. I'm so high on Saquon Barkley. I think he is just all world.
Oh, and he's phenomenal. And I guess that's the point, is how much do they value Saquon Barkley? Because if they value him enough, do you want to take the chance of letting him slip to the fourth pick? Or if you're in that mindset of like, well, all four of these quarterbacks are kind of in the same boat as far as talent, and we have narrowed it down to two, and we know we're going to get at least one of those two, so let's take the for sure guy at number one. I don't know. Like you said, that's why this draft is insane, because there's so many hypotheticals that could happen.
Yeah, I just think it's if you get Saquon Barkley and you don't get the quarterback you want, and that quarterback you get ends up not being that good, you even with an all-world running back, you still need a quarterback in the NFL. Like, you can't replace that position. And I think – but maybe some of the trends we've seen recently with Todd Gurley and with Jacksonville.
Leonard Fournette.
Leonard Fournette. Like, there's a couple running backs in the NFL carrying teams.
Yeah, for sure.
So maybe they're seeing that and thinking, if we get a all-world running back and just a top 15 in the league quarterback, maybe that goes a long way. Like, I don't know. Like, that's tough. That goes against conventional wisdom that says running backs are a dime a dozen and quarterbacks aren't. But the Browns have known him to go off the wall. So
right.
Who knows what they're going to do.
So if you're the Browns GM, what do you do? What's your pick? Number one overall.
I go Sam Darnold, number one overall.
Fair enough.
I think he's like Brett Favre. I think he's gonna throw a couple picks, but he's big and he's athletic and he's tough and he's got a good demeanor about him and he's not gonna be out there in front of TMZ doing dumb crap, I don't think. And then you get whoever the best athlete available is at number four.
Yeah.
And if Sam Darnold's your guy, you can put guys around him and you can be a successful football team, you know, whether you have Saquon Barkley or not.
Yeah. All right, fair enough. The other big news coming out, one of the other storylines, is that New England is thinking about taking a quarterback with their pick. Is this the end? The downfall of Tom Brady? Trying to find a successor or what?
Where's their pick?
I think it's like in the 20s.
23?
Maybe Lamar Jackson.
What about Lamar Jackson? What about the kid from Oklahoma State?
Mason Rudolph.
Mason Rudolph, he's a stud. I don't know. No, it's not the end. I mean, it's the last 10%
right.
of his career, regardless, right? Whether it's this next year and then done, or it's 2 years or 3 years, all of those timelines warrant getting a quarterback to put behind Tom Brady to learn, you know, to get a couple years under his belt like Garoppolo did.
Right.
So that he can take that job, because we know that Tom Brady's not going to play five more years.
No.
That we know.
I think three the most, right?
I mean, two more, three at the most. Yeah. And honestly, anything after this next season, I mean, well, even after this last season, they're all just, every season is a bonus. And every season is, you're just holding your breath that he doesn't get hurt, because when you're that old, sounds like he's 80, but your joints and your bones and your muscles and everything, they don't work like they did when you're 25. So one bad shot, you know, could be the end of his career. And I mean, he knows that. Everybody knows that.
Yeah. So, other big news, Gronk announced that he will return for the 2018 season. I don't think anyone necessarily saw it going any other way. I think they were just waiting for him to come out and say that. But
breaking news, you heard it here, folks. 30-year-old tight end Rob Gronkowski is not retired. That's great. Did any other 29-year-olds come out and say they're continuing their contracts?
I'm going to continue to work another year for sure. Yeah.
Well, that's right. I forgot to tell you. Me too.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah,
I was going to retire, but then, you know, I still rent.
That was going to be my blitz baggage question. What is similar about you, me, and Gronk? We're all coming back for work next year.
What do you guys have in common that I don't?
We have summers off.
Yes. There's no off season for me, okay?
So, going back though a little bit for the Patriots and Tom Brady. Does Tom Brady end his career as a New England Patriot? Or does he?
Yes, of course he does.
You think so?
Yes. Tom Brady?
Tons of absolute studs, first ballot Hall of Famers, have at the end of their career gone somewhere else because they weren't going to get the money they wanted or that the team...
At 40?
You don't think the Browns would take him at 40? You don't think the Browns would sign Tom Brady for a one-year, maybe two-year deal even at 40, 41 years old?
No, I think that the Browns would do a lot of things. I don't think Tom Brady would do it.
Really?
Like, that guy's been living in New England, wherever that is. Yeah. Boston, whatever that. New England's such a, like, a general.
It's like five it's states like saying, put together, yeah, six states
like saying
together.
You live in the West. Like, what does that mean? Right? Do you live in, is it Phoenix? Is it Oregon? Like, who knows? It's not that big of an area. It's actually small. But he's lived there for, like, 15 years, his whole career, whatever it is. He's not going to move. He's not going to pull up his roots with his kids and his supermodel wife to go play some crappy team. No. I would put so much money on that.
Your 401k?
Yeah. Yeah, I would. He's not going anywhere. He's going to – I don't know how many years he has left on his contract, but
I agree.
I think he'll play two more and then he'll be done and then – we'll all, you know, give him a standing ovation, and that'll be it.
I agree with you. I think he'll finish in New England. There's as much as I wanted to play devil's advocate, I just really don't think a guy that's won you five Super Bowls and been eight times and multiple MVPs and multiple wins and all that, divisional championships, I just don't think you can let him go somewhere else.
But yeah, no, I think that the Pats would let him go, and I think that another team would pick him up.
Yeah.
I just don't think he would do it.
Right. Fair enough.
I think he would, even if they traded him, he'd be like, nah, peace, I'm out. Like, do I have to pay something to void this contract? Yeah, let me know. I'll give you $100 bills.
Oh, well, Pac-12 names to remember as the draft happens tomorrow night. Obviously, Sam Darnold and Josh Rosen, both quarterbacks. Vita Vea from Washington, defensive tackle. Justin Reed, safety from Stanford. Uchenna Nwosu, linebacker from USC. And Isaiah Oliver, defensive back from Colorado, all have a lot of buzz around their names. So we will see where they're taken. Most likely, they'll all be taken somewhere in the first two rounds. So next week, we will have Andrew Ross, our NFL draft expert, back on to kind of give grades to all the teams and break down the Pac-12 players that were selected. So looking forward to that. But speaking of Pac-12, in the last 3 days, there have been some epic things happening in gymnastics, in golf, in softball. Let's start with gymnastics. UCLA won the women's gymnastics title in dramatic fashion. Sixth-year senior Christine Peng-Peng Lee notched a 10.0 on the beam to propel the Bruins ahead of two-time defending champ Oklahoma on the evening's final rotation. Basically, she needed a 10 to win the whole thing, and she nailed it. Wow. It was actually her second 10, perfect 10 of the night. Also got a 10 on the uneven bars. There's some big performances. Obviously, like I said, on the beam, Peng-Peng Lee won, followed by Kyla Ross from UCLA and Caitlin Ohashi. So UCLA took first, second, and third on the beam. And like I said, Peng-Peng Lee also took first in the bars. So a lot of great performances for the women's gymnastics that night. Also, another conference championship, men's golf. USC Trojans won the Pac-12 golf title, their first one since 2011, and 20th overall. They beat Colorado and Arizona State. They played at Rolling Hills Country Club in Rolling Hills Estates, California. Have you ever played up there, Kyle? Do you know where that is?
No.
I'm not sure either, but I'm sure it would just tear us apart. Anywho.
Yeah, it says country club, so I'm sure it's a beautiful private course somewhere we will never see.
Yep, exactly. But apparently it was pretty windy. Breezy conditions kept the scores in check for most of the day. The Trojans posted a 4-under on the final round to finish at 31 under par, 4 strokes ahead of second place Colorado and 8 strokes ahead of third place Arizona State. The Trojans are the first team to host and win the Pac-12 championship since Washington in 2009. So that's pretty cool. Winning on your home turf when you're hosting the tournament. It's pretty sweet. Realistically, what do you think you would shoot on a country club like that?
Well, the thing that you said that gave me the chills was wind.
Right.
Like, I'm so terrible golfing in the wind. Like, it's just a 10 mile an hour cross breeze just throws my mental game just just crap. So I would shoot a lot. So I mean, that's one of the things you said was it leveled the scores out.
Right.
So it made them, they didn't shoot like crazy under par, and then they were four under as a team, which,
yeah,
which is crazy for a bunch of 18, 19, and 20 year olds. But
you know, the key is when it's breezy to swing easy, and then you want to keep it low. So I would just use my putter all day. No matter where I'm at, I'm just taking my putter out and I'm just keeping that baby rolling on the ground.
I've never tried that, but that's a fantastic idea. My plan in the wind is always to overthink every shot and then swing way too hard.
Yeah, and I think that's what we all do, and I think that's honestly the perfect strategy for us amateurs.
Yeah, yeah, one out of every 12 times it works out really, really good.
And then you try and do it again, you know, the next time, even if you chunk it or the wind takes it 50 yards to the right, it just how it goes.
Yeah, because the next one could be the one of 10, you know? So you don't want to change the strategy when the next shot could be the one.
I love it. I love the optimism. Love it. Moving on to softball, UCLA swept Pac-12 rival and former number one ranked Washington to overtake the Huskies for the number one ranking in this week's USA Today softball Division I top 25 coaches poll. The Bruins are now 40-3 overall, and they received 29 first place votes, and they ended Washington's 9-week reign at the top of the poll. Oregon jumped to number two after a 4-0 week, which included a big non-conference win over number two Oklahoma. And the Ducks, they're now 38-7, also swept at home against Stanford. As far as the national standings go, UCLA, like I said, jumped to number one, Oregon number two, Washington number four, ASU number nine, and Arizona 10. So still, five teams in the top 10 of the women's softball is pretty freaking impressive. So good for them.
Yep, that's dominant performance nationwide.
And I know that you have a lot of other news for us. So, Kyle, give us your Kyle with the news.
All right. The Commission of College Basketball released its report and recommendations Wednesday morning. Chief among the recommendations are eliminating the one-and-done rule, allowing undrafted players to return to school, and banning cheating coaches for life.
Wow.
Death penalty. It's brutal.
Yeah.
Matisse Thybulle will return to Washington's men's basketball for his senior season.
Okay.
Thybulle was named the Pac-12 Defensive Player of the Year as a junior last year. Arizona State and Mississippi State have scheduled a home-and-home football series for 2024 in Tempe and 2025 in Starksville.
Ooh, nice.
Jason Gold of Diehards notes that Oregon's football had the best spring game attendance in the Pac-12 by far.
Really?
With 27,300 fans coming out to see the Ducks at Autzen Stadium. Did he say that?
Yeah, Autzen Stadium.
UCLA Women's Golf won the Pac-12 title Tuesday in Seattle with freshman Patty Tavataniti taking home medalist honors by defeating Team Lulavu in the playoff. With the gymnastics win you talked about and women's golf winning the Pac-12, softball jumping to number one in the country, and men's volleyball earning an NCAA tournament bid, it's been quite the few days for UCLA athletics. And international players could push Stanford's men's tennis to an NCAA title. The Cardinal is number four team in the country and will be the number two seed in the Pac-12 championships coming up here pretty shortly.
Wow.
And that's Kyle in the news.
All right, Kyle, I like it. Some good stuff there. We didn't really touch on this too much, but I did a little more research, actually. Remember we brought up the Oregon new facilities?
Yep.
It's going to be insane. They're spending between $200 and $300 million on upgrades and on new facilities. As if they needed anything else. Between $200 and $300 million. Absolutely insane.
Are they demolishing anything they currently have or just adding on? Because I feel like what they have right now is pretty legitimate.
I think they're adding on. And I don't know exactly what's happening. We can look that up and get the exact information for you guys. But yeah, I know it's a lot of money going into it. And that's when you have Uncle Phil in your back pocket. I mean, come on, Phil Knight.
I know.
He's just gonna make it happen. And almost 28,000 people at a spring practice game or a spring game. I mean, that's pretty insane. That's a lot of people.
That's the Staples Center.
Oh my
gosh. For the most part.
That's crazy. But let's move on a little bit because there is other big news right now. Absolutely insane. The NBA playoffs. So, quick update as far as how the playoffs are going and standings. Philadelphia beat Miami 4-1, so they move on. They're waiting to see who wins between Boston and Milwaukee. Boston is currently up 3-2. Cleveland won tonight on a LeBron James game winner to go up 3-2 against the Pacers. Toronto also won tonight to go up 3-2 against Washington. Golden State Warriors won their series 4-1, and they will face the New Orleans Pelicans, who swept the Portland Trailblazers 4-0. Utah and Oklahoma City are currently playing right now. Utah is up 3-1, if I'm not mistaken. And Houston and Minnesota are also playing right now, and Houston is up 3-1. So we will see how those games pan out. But this has been an absolutely incredible postseason for the NBA already, and we're only in round one. What are you most intrigued about so far, Kyle?
So we will get to that, but what you said is correct, right? Like we went into this NBA regular season thinking that it was going to be very predictable. Mm-hmm. We thought that Golden State was going to continue on the run that they've been on, and we thought that Cleveland was going to continue on the run that they've been on. We knew that Boston was going to step up. Injuries have slowed that down a little bit. We knew that Toronto was going to be Toronto, and they might turn out the way they've turned out the last three seasons with the same exact players. We don't know yet. But with some injuries, with some of the youth in this NBA really stepping up to the plate, there's been a lot more parity than we thought. Mm-hmm. The first thing I want to talk about, which has been very interesting to me, and I was watching the first half of this Minnesota-Houston game. By the way, Minnesota's up on Houston 59-55 at the break.
Okay, nice.
They're down 3-1, so they obviously got to win this game. They're in Houston. It's going to be tough for them to pull it out. But looking at this Minnesota roster, I'm a little bit confused how this team is 8 in the West. Now, I know the West is tough, mm-hmm. but this Minnesota roster is Derrick Rose, Jimmy Butler, Karl-Anthony Towns, Andrew Wiggins, Jeff Teague, Jamal Crawford, Taj Gibson, and a bunch of other dudes.
But a lot of good names.
6 or 7 legit basketball players.
Yeah. I agree. I mean,
how is this team not – how does Utah better than this team? Like, look at Utah's roster. Look at Minnesota's roster. You know, they have the – you know, Thibodeau is a coach who's coached, you know, half of these players were Bulls, right?
Right, right.
Like, I don't see how this team isn't better than they are. Maybe next year they're going to kind of break out and be that team, but – they should be more impressive than they are. Maybe that's why they're giving Houston a run for their money.
Yeah. I mean, very much a possibility. I don't know. I mean, I feel like it's similar to the Oklahoma City thing where it takes a little bit for them to gel. You know, I mean, obviously Jimmy Butler is new and he got hurt for a little while. You know, Karl-Anthony Towns he's a great player, but he's also low post, kind of mid post kind of guy. And so he needs the ball a lot. Jimmy Butler's the same way, needing the ball a lot. So I think those guys just figuring out how to play together, at some point it'll all click. And I think they will be good because, I mean, that's Andrew Wiggins was the number one or number two overall pick when he came out of college, if I'm not mistaken, traded when he was, cause he was for the Cleveland, right? And Kevin Love, they traded for him. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think they're going to be a very good team in the future. And I think even this year, making it in as the 8 seed and taking a game from Houston is a pretty big deal. So, and maybe taking a second one, but I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, I think I think they're going to step it up the next couple of years. I just think that roster is stacked. I think it's a really good mix, you know, of veteran talent and young talent. And, you know, with a good defensive coach like they have, this team should be really good for the next 2 or 3 years in a West where the youth is kind of becoming the new Western Conference. It's not the Spurs and the Lakers and
right.
Phoenix or whoever it was 10 years ago. It's a new West
right?
With Utah and with the new OKC and a lot of these teams coming up that, you know, weren't that great, you know, 10 years ago.
Yeah, I agree. I think I'm very intrigued by Boston. They got Marcus Smart back, and I know I'm being a bit of a homer right now because I'm a huge Celtics fan, but they got Marcus Smart back, and he is – I love the way he plays. He's diving on the floor. He's sprinting back on defense. He's switching. He's guarding everybody from point guard to big to center on the other team against Milwaukee. I love the way he plays, and I think him coming back is a huge spark for the Celtics. And I think they're going to win the first round. I mean, they're already up 3-2, and so I think they're going to take it. I don't know if they'll be able to beat Philadelphia in the next round, but how epic of a matchup is that going to be if they do win the first round? Boston versus Philly. I think that's going to be great. Even without Boston having Kyrie and Gordon Hayward, that matchup of youth from Philadelphia and the youth of the Boston Celtics, that I feel like that is going to be the next huge NBA rivalry in the East, at least. That's my opinion.
Yeah, that could be this year. That could be a really good young Philly team versus a young but beat up Boston team.
Right.
You know, for a chance to go to the Eastern Conference Finals. Now, in 2 or 3 years, like you said, that could be it, man. Yeah. Like, that could be some of the best in the NBA just duking it out to go to the finals. So that might be a preview of good things to come. I want to see Philly and Cleveland in the Eastern Conference Finals. Like, I just want to see it. I think that's a win-win for me, right? Like, I want to see LeBron go back and fight whoever's going to come out of the West. Or I want to see, you know, the polarizing team that is the Sixers play in the final. I mean, like, right, the Sixers went to the finals.
I know.
Like, they would have nothing to lose. This team would be playing on house money the whole time. Like,
yeah.
Imagine Sixers Houston. What in the world? Like, there is no downside. Like, the Sixers won the championship, it'd be like people's minds would be blown. And then if Houston wins, you know, James Harden gets a monkey off his back. Chris Paul gets a huge monkey off his back.
Right.
And the Sixers are like, okay, we went to the finals. We weren't expecting that. So yeah. I think that would kind of end up being a win-win too. So if the Sixers and Cleveland could go to the Eastern Conference Finals, I would love every minute of it.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I think as much as I love Boston and I want them to go as far as they possibly can, I think at some point, you know, you want the same, like we talk about March Madness, you want the best of the best to meet in the finals. And if a beat-up Boston team with their two studs out goes up against a Houston or a Golden State, like, it just doesn't fit well. The storyline would be great because you have some young, tough guys that are coming, that stepped up in the playoffs and grew up. But then I just think you go up against a seasoned team with great players in either Houston or Golden State, and it just doesn't turn out well. As opposed to if you get a full, healthy, young Philly team or a LeBron-led Cleveland Cavaliers team, it's, I think, a little bit better of a storyline, and I think a little bit more viewership for the matchup either way between Houston or Golden State. So as much as I want Boston to go all the way, I think for viewing purposes and for just popularity, I think Philly or Cleveland making it all the way to the finals would be a much better story.
Yeah, the NBA wants Philly, Cleveland, Houston, Golden State.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's no if or buts about it. If ands or buts about it.
Yeah.
That's what they want, right? Because it's a win-win. The Golden State goes. People love Golden State. Steph Curry is still the number one jersey in the NBA, I think.
Right.
Houston is, you know, the up-and-coming kind of villain almost.
Yeah.
People aren't huge fans of James Harden. Chris Paul's not liked everywhere. I think that they're kind of the Jafar of the NBA. Throw it back to a Disney reference. I have no idea why I thought of that. I think it was a James Harden's beard.
Maybe.
I think James Harden's beard just totally threw Jafar in my head, which I am confused about right now. And I just,
My gosh, we got to get that. We got to get a visual up that on our Instagram of Jafar versus James Harden next to James Harden.
I think Jafar has better teeth.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah, but Harden has a better beard.
He might have. James Harden's beard's legit.
Do you think Jafar would have been a good basketball player? He's pretty long and lanky.
He is long and lanky. I just thought about that.
He's and he moves really, really quickly, kind of deceptively quickly. He's kind of scary.
But is he a great team player? I feel like the locker room wouldn't work well for him.
Yeah, I agree.
Casting spells on people. Yeah. Like,
and he would want the ball too much, I feel like, you know?
Yeah, he'd be a ball hog for sure.
And he would have his one little friend that loves him, Iago. Isn't that his name?
He'd be a backup point guard. Yeah. Little tiny guy. Give me the rock! It's a really bad impression.
Yeah, that's all right. We just spent about 3.5 minutes talking about Jafar and and James Harden. That's all right. So let's talk a little bit about the Golden State, the New Orleans Pelicans matchup, because that's the only one we know for sure for the second round. First of all, which one of those two do you think had a more impressive performance in the first round? New Orleans versus the Blazers or Golden State versus San Antonio?
Oh, I mean, it's New Orleans, right? I mean, Portland was one of the hottest teams in the NBA the last third of the season. They were on fire. Damian Lillard was on fire. That team has two explosive guards.
Mm-hmm.
And Portland is a tough place to play. So with home court advantage, anybody going into that series would think that Portland would, I mean, I don't know if people would bet for a sweep, but I think four, five, six games would be a very common thought. New Orleans is, you know, they don't have Boogie, right? They haven't really proved themselves to be anything but just remotely decent team.
Are they better without Boogie?
I don't think they need him.
I don't think they need him either.
I never thought that fit worked.
Right.
Now, I will go on record and say that I didn't think Chris Paul and James Harden would work.
Mm-hmm.
And that has freaking worked.
But the difference, in my opinion, is that when you have two guards like Harden and Chris Paul, the offense that they run, where they get out and run and try and get a lot of shots and a lot of high, you know, pick and roll situation that either of them can run, I think that lends itself to people being happier because you'll get the ball in your hands more simply from the amount of offensive possessions that you have because you're trying to run and get more shots up, as opposed to, you know, Anthony and Boogie Cousins on the same team. They're both kind of like that mid-range, low post player, and so you can't be standing next to each other the whole game trying to create offense because only one guy can have the ball and try and back somebody down, you know? So I just don't think that two big men match up as better or as well as two guards like Paul and Harden.
Yeah, and I think especially with James Harden, like I know he likes the ball, but he's such a good offensive player that Chris Paul's a true point guard. James Harden's really a combo guard, right? Like he can play the one of the two. There's really not that big of a difference. Like Chris Paul can kind of run the offense a little bit and James Harden can go off the dribble and he can do some ISO things. He doesn't have to be a true kind of pass first point guard like Chris Paul is, so the positions are slightly different.
Mm-hmm.
I think the thought with New Orleans was Boogie Cousins is like a true five. He has a back to the basket.
Yeah.
Knock you down and uses post moves. Like Tim Duncan is really a four, but like a Tim Duncan type where his post game and his little tiny jumper is his game.
Right.
Anthony Davis is so dynamic and he can stretch the floor so much that the guy can like shoot threes.
Yeah.
That I think they thought that, you know, AD at the four and Boogie at the five could really work. I think if you're New Orleans, seeing what this team did this year,
mm-hmm.
having a trade piece like Boogie Cousins out there, like move that guy.
Yeah.
Well, there's so much young talent in this NBA. Go get somebody. You know, you have some good guards, right? You have just an incredible player in AD. Go get a wing.
Go
get a Kawhi Leonard. Go get a really good defensive two-way player. Go get a stretch four.
Yeah.
Right? Somebody that's a true four that can play the three, play the four. I mean, that is like, they have such an opportunity because normally you don't have a team that's this good with a all-star that you can trade, and they're in that position right now. So
right.
I can't be the only person that's thinking that. So I wouldn't be surprised if that happens.
Yeah, absolutely. And I agree with you. I think what they did to Portland, just sweeping them in a four-game series, especially when you had Damian Lillard, who was in contention for, or at least one of the talks for Player of the Year, the MVP, and they just ran through him. I mean, it was incredible, to be honest. But Golden State also pretty impressive without Steph Curry to just do what they did too. And San Antonio is a very well-coached team. I know they're going through a lot with Popovich's wife passing away. But Golden State looks good. And when they get Steph back, they're going to look even better. And that's just kind of how they do it. So we will see.
That's not super surprising to me. I mean, San Antonio is without their best player and Golden State had theirs.
Right.
KD is their best player. You know, they're without their number two. They're a better team, and San Antonio, who's the worser team, is out there without their number one.
Right.
I mean, that's a formula for a sweep all day. I'm actually surprised San Antonio took a game off them.
I know. Quick update. Utah Jazz are currently beating the Oklahoma City Thunder 71-47 in the middle of the third quarter.
Whoa.
Yeah. Absolutely.
They're in OKC, too.
Yeah, absolute shellacking as of right now.
Who is on that team?
Well,
who was on that team besides Spida Mitchell and that's his nickname.
Jay Crowder has 23 points tonight off the bench.
Rudy Gobert is a stud.
Yeah. Rudy Gobert is a stud. He's a big, athletic. They also have Joe Ingles. Did you see that guy shooting the from deep last game? Absolutely incredible. Just draining in Paul George's face. Joe Ingles got 14 so far. And as far as Westbrook is 5 of 19 from the field with 12 points.
That's tough.
So
Ricky Rubio.
Yeah, I like Ricky Rubio. I saw a great tweet that he looks like a guy that you would run into at Coachella or something like that.
I totally didn't recognize him the other day when I saw him on the floor. I was watching the game and I was like, who is that guy? And then I kept seeing highlights on Facebook about his triple double and I was like, why are they showing this random guy shoot threes?
Yeah.
Like, who is this guy? And I was like, that's him. He looks so different. That guy was like one of the biggest hyped, you know, European players to ever come over. They thought that guy was going to be just the next best thing, man. He just kind of, I don't want to say he was a flop because he's playing well this year, but I mean, I just don't know that true Lonzo Ball type point guard position works these days. And we've talked about that before. But.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, he's having a heck of a year this year, so it's hard to go against him. But which brings me to a good point. I don't know if you saw after game three, Westbrook said, because Rubio had a triple-double and one of the guys asked Westbrook what he thought about it, and he said, you know, whatever, he got it, but I'm gonna shut that down next game, and then obviously hasn't really shut it down. Did you like Westbrook's aggressiveness in that situation, coming out and saying, "I'm going to shut him down"?
Yes, love that. That is, you know me. I don't want to say that I'm a fan of the cocky athlete, right? But I'm a Patrick Reed fan. Be real. Like, if you're like Westbrook, he averaged a triple double the last 2 years in a row.
Yeah,
he is the man. Like, don't hate on a guy for acting like the man when he is the man. Like, just because, like, anybody that's an athlete, anybody that's played at a really, really high level, whether it be high school, college, professional, whatever it is, when you get to that point where you're one of the best at what you're doing,
yeah,
it's really hard to look around you and think, well, let's just be a team player and be like a nice guy. Like, come on. Like, no, you are the best. Like, you kind of have to have that fire inside of you to be that good, right? Like, that's why Michael Jordan's a jerk, and that's why Kobe was so abrasive, and that's why Tiger Woods was kind of, you know, rough around the edges before he had all this stuff go down, because those personality types are the guys that thrive and the guys that end up being that good.
Right.
So I never fault on guys for just being aggressive like that. Yeah, you're going to say you're going to shut them down.
Yeah.
Challenge yourself, right? Put yourself out there so that you have to go perform because you said something and you have to keep your word, you know, to the American people.
Yeah. To all of the American people to make sure that you help the economy by stopping Ricky Rubio from scoring.
I just turned it into like the State of the Union address somehow. I don't know how that happened.
Oh my gosh. But yeah, okay. I think I'm just much more of a let the play speak for itself, and so now he kind of looks like an idiot. And I, as much as I love Westbrook, when you come out and say that and then you don't perform, it's kind of like, well, you overshot your own confidence, and a Ricky Rubio from Spain, who is far less of a point guard than you are, is just torching you in this series. And it's kind of like, you know, people get to rub that in your face. So I'm much more of like a, hey, he had a triple-double, heck of a game. We're going to go back to the drawing board. We're going to figure out how we could stop him. That is like my approach to it.
Hold on. Was that a recording?
It was, yeah.
Tony, was that you, or did you read that off of a piece of paper? Come on. Have a personality. No, you don't want guys to say that.
I do have a personality, but I don't want to ever give somebody the upper hand on me for talking trash. And then if I don't back it up, then they get to throw that in my face as well as beat me, which I feel like is a two for one.
True. And one thing you're right about is they always say, don't give the other team bulletin board material.
Mm-hmm.
And so you are doing that. And I don't think that's a good idea, especially with a young team like Utah that's fired up. Donovan Mitchell's a baller. He's playing out of his mind. All of a sudden you're going to challenge him.
Right.
Maybe not a good idea, but he's also challenging himself, and he's putting himself out there and saying, no, I'm the guy.
Right.
This is my team. I've had two record-setting seasons, and I'm going to stop this right now.
Yeah.
And I like that he's putting himself out there. Now, he looks like an idiot until, you know, 2 weeks from now when everybody forgets about it and we go back to remembering how awesome Russell Westbrook is. But I don't know. I like it.
Fair enough. Other updates from the NBA playoffs. Dwayne Wade and Miami Heat are out, as well as Manu Ginobili and the Spurs, both rumored to possibly be retiring now. What do you think about that? Do you think they will? Do you think they should? Do you think that one or both should come back? Do you think they have any in the tank?
Who did you say, Tony Parker, the first guy?
No, Dwayne Wade and Manu Ginobili.
Dwayne Wade, that's right.
Yeah.
Man, Ginobili, he had a couple good games.
Yeah.
In that series. I mean, I think his game is so unique that it's hard to defend. And obviously we've seen that over the last 15 years, right? But I think that the way this team is going and the way that the future looks, it's probably time to pull the plug for both guys.
Yeah.
Like if you were Ginobili and the Spurs have Kawhi coming back and he's happy and you're great and you make a run to the Western Conference Finals and everything's going fantastic and you feel like the team has a shot next year to win a championship, stay.
Right.
Give it one more run, right? Your body's healthy, you're fine, go for it. But the team's not going to be good. I mean, you want to go through that the off season, and then you got to beat your body up, and you're going to come off the bench. And then what, maybe Kawhi leaves and you're like the 10 seed in the West?
Yeah.
Like, no, I wouldn't want to do that. So
not after,
Dwayne Wade,
yeah.
Dwayne Wade's had a great career, but Miami's not going to be any better next year than they are this year. So same situation there.
Yeah, and I would imagine both are first ballot Hall of Famers, right? I would think.
Yeah, I mean, they're champions, right? Yeah. And they played – they were – if – Ginobili didn't win any finals MVPs, right? Tony Parker did.
Yeah, I'm not really. I would have to go back and look at the stats. I don't know off the top of my head, but I mean, I think he has four, if not five, the same five that Tim Duncan has for championships. So,
multiple. And he's an integral part of every single one of those teams. So, yeah, I think both of them are first ballot for sure.
What do the Portland Trail Blazers and the Ball Brothers have in common? They're both at home on the couch. Good call. So Portland is obviously out of the NBA playoffs, and the Ball Brothers are out of Lithuania. Shocker. LeVar had some frustrations with the coach in Lithuania, and so he pulled his sons LiAngelo and LaMelo for the last two games of the season and brought them home. So that no real discussion around that. That's just news, I guess, if you want to call it news. That.
Yeah, I'm going to expand on that in our Blitz package about that.
Okay, so fair enough. Well, then that's a good transition. Why don't we just jump right into the Blitz package, because that kind of wraps up the NBA playoffs, unless you have anything else you want to add?
Nope, I think we covered most of it.
All right.
So like you said, LeVar Ball pulled his two sons out of Lithuania. They are both back in the United States, or at least on their way, stating that the coach wasn't giving them the playing opportunities and wasn't running the team the way that he wanted it to be ran. Shocker.
Mm-hmm.
I was listening to the radio today, and a couple guys were defending that decision, saying that, you know, leaving high school was probably a good decision and leaving UCLA was maybe a good decision, and leaving Lithuania is a good decision, essentially saying that quitting is okay, which is ridiculous and a horrible example and precedent to set for your kids or any youth around you that is an okay thing to do.
Right.
Sorry for the public service announcement, but jeez. My question to you is this the end of the LeVar Ball era?
No, not at all. I think we're just getting – he is leaving Lithuania and putting himself right back into the major media market of L.A., where he is going to become so much more involved with all the draft stuff going on. Guaranteed – I don't even know when the NBA draft is, sometime in June or July – he is going to be so much stuff leading up to why LiAngelo should be drafted, why everyone's overlooking him, why LA's stupid for not putting the two Ball brothers on the same team. Didn't they see what they did at Chino Hills? Yeah, high school. What? I don't understand. Like, I don't understand that argument. Like, didn't you see what they did when they were together? It's like they were playing against literally 5'10 non-athletic kids that were just playing varsity basketball for fun. Like, what do you think is going to happen? I don't get that. No, so I think that the storm is approaching, and it's approaching rapidly, because with what he's trying to do with LiAngelo getting drafted, I think he's coming right back in the forefront.
So I disagree. I think that this is the end of the run for LeVar Ball. I think that the last bit of fame he has to grasp onto is the NBA draft and LiAngelo. And that's the last thing he has to get himself in the limelight, because outside of that, he's just a dad of an NBA player. And guess what?
Yeah.
There's a ton of those.
Yeah.
There's even dads of NBA players that played in the NBA.
Right.
And so if anybody's going to get airtime after this NBA draft is done and LiAngelo doesn't get drafted, it's not going to be him.
Right.
I feel like I have a pulse on sports media for the most part, and I feel like his fame has just been dwindling.
Mm-hmm.
And it used to be every single thing he said was publicized or was talked about or whatever. And I feel like that's kind of stopped. Now, that could be the fact that he was in a really tiny Eastern European country for the last 9 months or whatever it was.
Maybe didn't even have Wi-Fi.
Yeah. Maybe he had no cell reception. He was actually talking on his phone the whole time,
right?
But nobody's on the other end. So it never got anywhere. He's just yelling at his cell phone saying this and that. I can't even try to do an impression. He's just such an idiot. But I think that after LiAngelo doesn't get drafted, that's it. I just think that people are going to be sick of him. They're going to be over it. I'm over it.
Yeah.
I think he's in great shape for a 50-year-old dad. I do.
Yeah.
I saw him on the WWE that one time, and he ripped his shirt off, and I was like, man.
Yeah. No, yeah.
Guy works out. He's a big, strong guy. It seems like he might have played linebacker at one point, but I think he's
– tight end.
I think he's done.
He was on the practice squad for the Carolina Panthers.
There you go.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah. I think
– Did he quit the team?
No, he took a contract with a team in Lithuania. So,
Lithuanian football league, yeah, I love it.
Yeah.
And then he quit that.
Yeah. But Realistically, I don't understand his thought process of why he thinks LiAngelo is going to get drafted when he played no minutes, if I'm not mistaken, in a real college basketball game, and went over to Lithuania, where it's not the best league in Europe, and he only averaged 12 points a game, and he shot it like 25 times. So it's like, I don't understand where you think he has the skill necessary to then go compete at the NBA level. Yeah. Anyways, I think we've been over LeVar Ball since we called him Voldemort in like September. Right. You know what I mean? Like whenever that was, it was November, I think, when he got in trouble for stealing, or December. And we're like, okay, we're done with this. This is ridiculous. So
ridiculous.
Anywho, transitioning from one royal family to another, there is a new royal baby. William and Kate had a baby, their third, and the name has not been revealed. So I just want to know if you have any guesses on what the name might be.
What's a good British name? It's probably something super boring.
Yeah.
Like William and Kate. It's probably like Michael or Jeffrey.
Right.
Or something like that. So I think that the whole idea of a royal family in 2018 is a little absurd.
Right.
I mean, we have ours, right? We have the Kardashians.
True.
They did nothing to get where they are, and yet we glorify them.
Yes.
We follow them on social media, and we wear what they wear, and we, you know, shampoo in what they shampoo.
Mm-hmm.
And
lather, rinse, repeat.
Yeah. I think they're both ridiculous. So your guess is as good as mine.
Okay. Well, I don't really know. Hasn't been revealed, obviously, but Prince William and Kate Middleton. Just for fun, because I think it'd be kind of cool. Leo. I think it might be Leo.
Just Leo, it's Leonardo. But then Leo for short.
Yeah, maybe. Or Leonard. Leonard. That's more British, right? Yeah.
That's more British.
Leo.
Yeah.
But what would they call him? Duke Leo?
Duke Leo.
Prince Leo?
William's a prince.
William's a prince, yeah.
So what's the son of a prince?
Jafar. I don't know. I'm not really sure, to be honest with you.
Oh, boy.
Oh, wait. 3 hours ago, they're going to release it. Oh, no. Never mind. They're going to release it today at some point, but they're 9 hours ahead, so we'll get it for next podcast.
How about Timothy?
Oh, maybe.
Timothy's a good, boring British name.
All right, Timothy it is. Well, that was my first Blitzbaggers question. Just kind of wanted to softball pitch it up to you. Start with an easy one.
That's pretty easy because anything I said was right.
All right, what's your second one?
All right, so kind of transitioning from the whole coach situation with LeVar and Lithuania, the shakiest gun in the West and I had a little conversation this afternoon regarding a few things, one of which being the importance of players versus coaches on championship teams.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I was arguing was, well, I'll pitch it to you before I give you my opinion.
Okay. So
in major sports,
mm-hmm.
football, baseball, basketball, who's more important to have on a team and who would you rather have long-term, a great player or a great coach?
It's a great question. Great coach. I think if you have someone that schematically is top tier and can make adjustments and can put people in the right places, I think that long term it's better for them. That's the same reason why I take at this point Belichick over Brady.
We did have that conversation.
Yeah, and I mean, that is not to say that great players don't make a huge impact. Obviously, top-tier talent is what most coaches need to be successful, but I think if I had to choose between top-tier talent and mediocre coach or top-tier coach and somewhat mediocre talent, I think I would go top-tier coach.
When you phrase it that way, do you want to change your answer?
Well, but not everyone has mediocre. It's not all mediocre talent. Like, NBA players are NBA players, right? So, if I had to take the Utah Jazz with a top-tier coach or the Golden State Warriors with a mediocre coach, I think I would still go with a great coach. I'm changing my own answer. I'm going great players. I'm backpedaling for sure. I'm definitely backpedaling. I think you're right. I don't know. Players, but... coaches are important too.
It's true. Here's my argument, and I'll make it quick and simple, and then you can kind of digest it for a second. Great players can win championships with mediocre coaches. Mm-hmm. Great coaches cannot win championships with mediocre players. Mediocre players do not win championships. Eric Spoelstra wins championships. Lou Williams, is that his name? No, what's his name?
Ty
Cleveland?
Ty Lue?
Ty Lue. Yeah. There's a Lou in there.
Leo.
He's won a championship, right? You take Michael Jordan off of the Bulls and you give him Tony Kerkorian as a coach. Mm-hmm. No, nothing against your coaching ability. He's still Michael Jordan. He could still win a championship.
Right. I would just yell at him to do what he does. Just be Michael Jordan. Just be Michael Jordan.
You take Greg Popovich and you give him the Phoenix Suns. They're not going to win a championship.
Right.
That's my argument.
But I guess you have to look at the differential, right? Like, can a top-tier coach bring out the best in guys that a top-tier talent wouldn't get out of themselves? So, like,
The Suns would be better if they had Greg Popovich.
Right.
One of the things that Mr. Shaky, Mr. Gun in the West, I don't know how to say that, brought up, and actually I brought it up and then I realized I made the argument for him, is that recruiting is a big part of coaching. That's actually bringing in the player. Now that's probably maybe a different conversation, because they say, well, what about Coach K,
right?
No matter what players he has, he competes,
right?
And I'm like, well, his program is so successful that he gets the best players, so it's the players that are winning, but it's him that brought him in. So maybe that's when like the two arguments kind of blend together.
I got it.
Recruiting is like that gray area between coaching and playing.
Yeah.
But once you take – if you say I want better than average players with a really good coach, or better than average coach with really good players, the coach might win.
Right.
Because that coach could bring up the talent of the players. If you talk about the extremes like I did when I made my little mini argument, you got to go players, right?
I mean, I feel like, yeah, now that I talked through it a little bit, yeah. But it's harder because, I don't know. That was a good question. You stumped me. First time in my life I think I've been stumped.
That was great because you were answering and I could see it in your face.
Yeah, I was like,
you did not believe what you were saying.
No, I didn't.
Like, I'm saying this, but I don't think it's true.
Well, because initially I want to say that coaches matter, right? Like, initially that's what I want to think, like, a coach matters, because they do. But I guess the question is, to what extent
we're not saying that they don't.
Right.
Right?
It's just, what would you rather have?
Yeah, and I think the argument on the coaching side could be made that if you have a great coach, you can have him for 35 years.
True.
Coach K can impact your program for 40 years.
Yeah.
Whereas MJ can only impact a team for so long. Mm-hmm. Right? So, I don't know. We dance back and forth all night, I guess.
You're not much of a dancer, so we'll just end it there.
No argument here. Yeah.
So we talked. We kind of hinted at this earlier. Westbrook, Baker Mayfield, and Patrick Reed. They're all kind of cut from the same cloth.
Yeah.
Who would you say is the biggest dick out of all of them?
Patrick Reed.
Yeah, agreed. 100%. Just
because, yeah, he has documented things that he did that he's admitted to that are dickish.
Yeah, and that maybe isn't the greatest.
Baker Mayfield grabbed his dick.
That's true. And he, yeah.
So, you know, that's tough.
We keep saying the word dick a lot. What if they name the royal baby Richard? And it's
Richard.
Duke Dick.
Dude, if his name is Duke Dick. Man, somebody needs to. That's just awesome. I really hope that happens.
Yeah, that's pretty good. So here is where I was going to get at with this question. I figured we would agree on Patrick Reed, but I think that they have very similar personalities. But I think that Westbrook is loved by his teammates. You know what I mean? I think that Patrick Reed is voted as one of the worst players on tour, and I think Baker Mayfield. Coaches and players love him, but I think he comes off a little abrasive. I think Russell Westbrook is in a little bit different of a category, in that he is emotional and he is out there and he wears everything on his sleeve, but he also is very loyal and he loves and teammates love him for the most part, unless it becomes a discussion about ball time, about how much of time he has the ball, if that makes sense. You know what I mean? Like, but I think aside from that, you won't find a lot of players that don't think that Russell Westbrook doesn't have their back.
Yeah, I think the commonality between Westbrook and Baker Mayfield is that they will fight tooth and nail to the death for their team.
Right.
Right. Like, they are there for their guys. They're there for their team. They're there for their program, franchise, whatever it is. And I think they have that in common. Obviously, golf is different because it's an individual sport. He's obviously there for himself, as right. every golfer is, unless he's in the Ryder Cup, in which case he was a hero. And I feel like his teammates loved him in that instance, maybe just for his performance, not for his personality.
Right.
But Westbrook has never done anything really on the court or off the court that's that appalling.
Right.
Right. Like, he's never been in legal trouble. He's never thrown a punch at anybody, right? Like, he's gotten a couple, you know, chest bumping scuffles just because I think he has so much fire and passion that,
right.
that tends to rub off on some people the wrong way. I think when you perform like he does and you know that that's the fire that he has, like, those kind of things are going to happen.
Right.
But I think that's actually really easy. I think it's, you know, Patrick Reed one, Baker Mayfield, you know, there in the middle, and then Westbrook right down below. But I think I appreciate all three of their fire and passion for the sport that they play.
Right. And I think that's what you were mentioning earlier about how, you know, you love what he said about shutting down Ricky Rubio was more because of the passion and the fire behind it. And so I actually came up with that question because last game, I don't know if you saw, but Westbrook got fined $10,000 because he walked on the court and got in Rudy Gobert's face after Rudy Gobert. But like, I feel like of the three, Westbrook is like the least selfish in that he cares so much about teammates and the team. And that's where a lot of the emotion comes from, as opposed to, you know, Patrick Reed just kind of, I mean, he just kind of seems very selfish and kind of like a dick. But Baker Mayfield at times, I feel like, kind of goes on to that selfish route.
Yeah, I see that. One of the things I love about Russell Westbrook is that face that he makes when he dunks on a fast break. How? I don't even know what that is. I don't even know if it's a growl or a snarl.
Yeah.
Or a stare. And he kind of like tightens his shoulders up and flexes like that.
Yeah.
That'll piss some people off.
Yeah, for sure.
Like anytime you dunk down the lane and then you make a face like F all y'all.
Yeah.
In the lane, like, this is my lane. Like, that's that's awesome. Like, that's why he gets in scuffles. Like, you make faces at people like that. Like, they don't like it.
Yeah. All right. Do you have any more questions for me? Or is that it?
That's it. It looks like Houston's going to take out Minnesota.
Okay. So they'll advance.
They got a nice lead there.
Any update on that?
And Utah OKC is 78-78 with 12.
No minutes. Way. Yeah. That's awesome.
So that's in OKC. So if OKC pulls that game out, this could be a series.
I have one more question for you.
Okay.
I was looking up an article on the funniest athletes of all time, and I'll give you the top three, and which one would you want to cast in a commercial? So the number three ranked funniest player of all time was Peyton Manning. Number two was Charles Barkley, and number one was Shaquille O'Neal.
Oh man, those are all so good.
I know, right? I was like, that is tough.
You know, I think I'm going to go Peyton because I feel like he has the most acting ability. I feel like Charles is a little bit of a caricature of himself, and Shaq is, I don't want to say, I mean, he's kind of a goober.
Yeah.
He's really funny.
Right.
But he's just kind of a goob. I feel like Peyton Manning is really clever.
Right.
And witty. And I think that you'd have a lot more flexibility, and he could be really, I mean, I think he could be in a movie.
Yeah.
If only he was blessed with, you know, a smaller forehead, maybe some Brad Pitt-like looks. That guy'd be in Hollywood right after his NFL career. You know what I mean? Like, he's kind of a goofy-looking dude, but he's hilarious. He is. He's made himself into a superstar outside of football.
The skit he did on Saturday Night Live where he's playing with the little kids and he's, like, cussing at them and throwing the ball as hard as he can and knocking them over is one of the funniest skits I've ever seen in my life. Seriously, I gotta find that, and maybe we'll play a segment of it, because I die every time I see that.
And he does that kind of stuff with it. That's the thing is, Charles and Shaq, they'll do it, but you could tell that they're not acting that well, and they'll mess up, but you know it's them, so it's funny. Peyton Manning is serious. Dead serious and not even break character. That's what's so impressive.
Oh my gosh, I love it. Well, this has been a good one. We've talked about Disney. We've talked about Duke Dick. We've talked about sports, which this is what it's supposed to be about, but it's not. I seriously cannot tell you how much I hope they name that kid Richard so we can call him Prince Dick or Duke Dick for the rest of his life, because that would be so awesome.
I'm actually really excited to hear what the name's going to be now, and I've never cared before, so thank you for, you know, bringing another side of excitement to my life.
You're welcome. It also could be a crushing defeat if it is like a Timothy now, or like a Leo. I would be so upset if that's what it turns out to be.
At least the British like to go with classic names.
Right.
Because the celebrities in this country, man. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, like Apple and West and South.
You could give me 1,500 guesses for some of these celebrity names. I would still not get it right, because it would be the first time anybody's ever been named that.
Yeah. Oh, that's so true. Oh, man, that's so true. All right, well, this has been a good one. It's been awesome. Next week, draft. We're going over draft grades. We'll also have Dan. A lot going on next week with Andrew Ross coming back on and Thunder Dan for NBA updates. So we'll see you guys next week. Kyle, thanks again for coming on.
All right, Cleveland, don't be stupid. Don't be stupid, Cleveland. Do the right thing.
Oh, bye-bye.